Coming up this week, off screen.
Charlize Theron is an atomic blonde.
The latest Sharknado causes global swarming.
Japan faces off against Shin Godzilla.
We meet Tom of Finland.
And it's a dark night.
All those to come and more, off screen.
This is off screen. Off screen. Latest film news and reviews. This is Offscreen, the on-screen radio show.
Ooh, welcome to Offscreen. I'm Van Connor.
I am Case Allen.
Welcome back, Mr. Allen. Sorry for the
Hello.
Late in the day recording this week.
It's okay. It's actually quite early in the day.
Well, it's early in the day, but we're doing this actually on day of film release. We never do that.
Never. Yeah, you know it's been a busy week full of weddings, christenings, funerals.
Exactly. Family.
But I went to York, got stuck in 3 hours worth of traffic. That was fun.
Okay, I came up the A1 and got stuck in a lot of traffic, but...
We've beaten traffic to be with you here.
We have. So, we've got loads of films. We've got loads of reviews. We've got loads of news. We've got Box Office Top 5. But, of course, we need to start with some news. Give me some news, Mr. Allen. What you got for me?
Have you heard about this Hellboy reboot?
That there Hellboy?
Yeah, this is really shaping up.
Okay,
really,
so this lovely. Is Hellboy Rise of the Blood Queen, I believe.
But it's not.
Okay.
Not anymore. It was going to be called Hellboy Rise of the Blood Queen, and Now it will be called Hellboy.
Oh, okay. So yeah. It's just Hellboy.
Drop the Rise of the Blood Queen. It is cleaner.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just going to be called Hellboy now.
Oh, okay, so that kind of really affirms it as replacing the
original.
This is a
reboot.
Okay, fair enough.
This is it. But, David Harbour was announced as being Hellboy, which is pretty great.
That's good. He's the sheriff from Stranger Things.
Yes. I think it's probably what most people will know him from.
I know him as Elliot from The Newsroom as well.
That as well, yeah. But he's great, and I feel like he's pretty perfect.
He's awesome, isn't he?
Yeah. Neil Marshall, who did some ace episodes of Game of Thrones, did The Descent,
did Dog
Soldiers.
Yeah.
He is doing this, which is great.
Ian McShane is filling in for the John Hurt role.
Yes.
As Broom. Professor Bloom. Broom?
Yeah.
Broom?
Broom. Yeah.
It was Bruton Home, but they shortened it to Broom.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
So he's kind of like his father figure mentor. And now we have a Blood Queen.
A villainess, as
yeah.
it were.
Yeah. Mila Jovovich.
Well, why not?
I'm cool with that.
Yeah, I could go with that. I could sort of see her doing that. And it's nice to see her sort of stepping out of the sort of Paul Anderson kind of subgenre.
Yes.
And into someone else's. So.
Yeah, and being a baddie for change. Because I think she is good baddie.
She could give good baddie, I think.
Gives good villain.
Gives good villain. Yeah, I like that. Yes. Yeah. Well, that's what we're going. Gives good villain.
Gives good villain.
Yes, yeah. Well done. Okay, so let's talk about our first film of the week then. Let's talk about Shin Godzilla.
Yes.
Or Shin Gojira, as it's actually called. And, right, that becomes relevant in a second. So, you know, there's always been the whole Gojira, Godzilla sort of disconnect.
Yeah.
That comes up.
Oh.
Okay, not like the sort of weird aside that the Emmerich film had. Right, so this is another reboot of Godzilla. This is a Japanese reboot, however, and, well, they claim that what they've done is they've motion-captured a performer as Godzilla, but it still kind of plays like a man in a suit, albeit with much higher-scale modelling work than we've ever had before. Basically, same premise. Godzilla shows up off the Japanese coast, and it's how do the government react to him? You know, how does the military operation to stop Godzilla go down? And this is very much a conversation piece, very much about the sort of political side of it. It's apparently a reaction to things like Fukushima and recent geopolitical events relating to Japan. Apparently, it's all in response to that, and it takes its cues from how they worked to deal with that and the effects that it had and the news coverage of it. And they apply the same sort of sensibilities to Godzilla. Now, this is very much, as I say, a traditional-looking Japanese Godzilla movie. Because this is Toho again, who did all the Godzilla movies to begin with. And they come up with all these sort of modern realized ways to involve Godzilla in the modern world. So, for instance, the nuclear breath it used to have now takes the form of like a spectral beam like thing that takes out all the planes in the sky.
That's cool.
It is very cool, isn't it? One of their new plans involves bullet trains loaded with bombs and sent unmanned towards Godzilla, and they do this from all directions. There's so many sort of cool modern little twists put on it all, and you've got the sort of political side of it going on in the background as well. And it's actually something. You sit there and you think, okay, I can see why you would do this. Because it's not like the Gareth Edwards one, which focused on the idea of Godzilla as a force of nature, as a monster movie. This is something closer to, okay, what's the inside Downing Street version of a Godzilla movie? Or whatever the Japanese equivalent may be. What is the Japanese political bureau called?
I don't know. I got a bit fascinated with this at one point. So trying to find out where like different political leaders live.
Okay.
Not for like, I didn't have some plan to like wipe them all out. I was like, what is the Canadian version of like the White House?
Yeah, exactly.
It is a cottage.
It's the White House.
The White House.
The White House.
Yeah, no, yeah. It is a cottage.
Is it?
Yeah, which is great.
That's brilliant. Mm. That's the cottage.
It's some address, and then it is a cottage.
Okay, so.
Which is great.
Okay, so it kind of shares its description with the title of an awful Jennifer Ellison horror comedy starring Andy Serkis.
It does.
Yeah. Fair enough. So Shin Godzilla, if you're a fan of Godzilla generally, if you always had that sort of love for the series, which I know is quite a widespread thing now, you're going to love this. This is actually something new, a different spin on it. It does very, very distinctly stand apart from Gareth Edwards' version, which is now, what, only 3 years old, the last Godzilla?
Yeah, when was that? Was that 2014?
I believe it was. Yeah. I think it was 2014. But this does stand apart. It does look like sort of more of an old school traditional man in a suit with some model city. And yeah, it worked for me. I was entertained. I was interested. I don't think it's brilliant. I think it's still going to put off a lot of like newcomers. I don't think are really going to particularly warm to this. And yeah, it's a kind of an international political subtitled drama with an occasional monster movie element. And I'm okay with that. It was pretty fun. So have you got any more news for me, Mr. Allen, before we plug the podcasts and the competitions? Anything you could bring to the table, so to speak?
Yes. So Blade Runner 2049 is coming out. And there was a bit of speculation about if they were going to like maybe soften the rating a little bit, get more audiences in.
Because Blade Runner was a hard 15, wasn't it?
It was, or a hard R in America.
A hard R.
The new one is going to be rated R.
Fair enough.
So we can kind of assume what we are in store for.
I would assume a 50. Denis Villeneuve does tend to make quite adult movies, though. His movies are uncompromising.
Like, pretty much 15s across the board, I believe.
Yeah, like, I mean, Sicario was a really dark, yes, a deep 15 Sicario. Yeah,
like, even a film like Prisoners, where it's not that gory or that bloody.
I think it's more the psychological side of Prisoners.
Yeah.
Particularly Paul Dano.
But yeah.
Who pretty much earned that rating on his own.
There was a really, really great shot in that film where he's trapped somewhere. And there's one little bit of light that comes in. And he's focused on his eye.
I remember.
Yeah.
Oh, it's creepy. I've still never seen Enemy, the Denis Villeneuve film Enemy.
Yeah.
Is that Jake Gyllenhaal? Or?
That is Jake Gyllenhaal. I recommend it. Every film I've seen of his, I think I've seen him. I think I am up to date.
I need to see Enemy. That's the last one on my list.
Yeah.
But
he is kind of knocking it out of the park.
He really is. Yeah. This is why I don't want him to get that James Bond job, because I think he's too good for it. I think it's like Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
I don't want Christopher Nolan to have something like that, because that denies us an original Christopher Nolan film. I want another specifically Denis Villeneuve film.
I'm fine with Denis Villeneuve doing films like Blade Runner, so it's just taking his own spin, because his next one after this is Dune.
Yeah, which I can't wait for, because I think we've said it before, that will be the ultimate science fiction movie.
That'll be it, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, provided you get Patrick Stewart back, because that's totally needed.
Yeah.
Every time.
And Sting. Get Sting back.
Who do you get to play the Sting role in the modern day?
Who is the modern day? I think Sting is, just because all that tantric stuff he does.
I had odds on you just deadpan replying with Ed Sheeran, but...
Come on, Jenny Wallace,
Ed Sheeran, one of the two. Okay, so let's plug the podcast edition, extended bits that we can't fit into the radio edit, Moment of Cage, more film news, lots of fun, and you can find that on iTunes, on Acast, on Deezer, on TuneIn, or go on our website, go on onscreenfilm.com, and in the off-screen section, you can find the podcast edition there, extended podcast edition, if you will. And of course, Acast users, Digital Bling, lots of fun. We even put the trailers in there because,
We're just great.
We're great like that.
Great.
Meanwhile, competitions. We've got one competition running this week. We're still giving away Blu-rays for The Transfiguration, which is an awesome, awesome vampire movie. If you've not seen it, it is so worth a look.
Yeah, it's about a vampire in Brooklyn, but it's not in Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's not Eddie Murphy's Vampire in Brooklyn, which, and the only bad thing about that is it means it doesn't star Charlie Murphy. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what you will. But yeah, onscreenfilm.com, go in the competition section. The Transfiguration on Blu-ray. Win a copy, watch it, love it as much as we did, and then do it all over again and watch it again and love it again, because that's what I plan on doing. I don't know about you. So that's on my list.
I'm going to do that.
With the latest film news and reviews, this is Offscreen, the on-screen radio show.
And we're back. So, Mr. Allen, where are we going next?
I think it's time to jump the shark.
Are we going
to
jump the shark?
Let's jump the shark.
Jump the shark, then. Okay, it is time for Sharknado 5, Global Swarming. And wow. Okay, so this has somehow made it to five films, Mr. Allen.
Of course, because it costs about $100 to make.
Oh, don't, because here's an interesting bit of trivia about Sharknado 5.
Is this going to be something about the pay scale?
This is about the pay scale.
Yeah.
So Ian Ziering got given $500,000 to star in this, right?
Yeah.
Which puts him 200 grand ahead of Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman got 300 grand. Yeah. Ian Ziering got $500,000.
However, I think for her next performance as Wonder Woman,
I think she might get more.
She might get a couple of bob more.
Well, I had to explain this to someone the other day. Actually, yeah,
rightly so.
That's what happened with Thor, with Chris Hemsworth as Thor. He only got like a few hundred grand for the first Thor movie and got like...
And then renegotiated.
Yeah, he got like, something like three times that for the Avengers, and then obviously had to renegotiate and, yeah.
Yeah, we'll be on millions and millions.
Millions and millions
that's,
now.
That's how it works. I think it's good. You find someone that is right for the character, builds them up, makes them a household name, and that's it.
And now for something infinitely dumber, Sharknado 5.
We're going a little bit too, like...
We went a bit too intellectual.
Yeah, too intellectual.
Okay, so Sharknado 5, which sees director Anthony C. Ferranti return. It's the first installment of the series not to be written by the original creator, Thunder Levin, whose name I will never get tired of saying out loud. Thunder Levin, ladies and gentlemen.
The new writer is Lightning McQueen.
Exactly. So the idea is now, it's years and years after the first Sharknado movie, the central couple, Finn Shepard and April Wexler, have a son together, Gil Shepard, because we've got to keep that pun series alive. He's now sort of a tween. They're on holiday in London so that Finn can talk at a UN conference about Sharknados, which seems to be at Downing Street, because that's where the UN meets. The UN meets in Downing Street. That's totally
right,
a thing that happens.
Yeah.
But while they're in London, a Sharknado appears. And this comes about shortly after Finn is summoned to Stonehenge by his old pal Nova, played by Cassie Serbo, who's now on her third movie in this series. And she's found a cave beneath Stonehenge that tells, through cave paintings, the history of humanity's battle against the Sharknados and how they have an ancient amulet that can actually control and utilize Sharknados as a portal-like mode of transportation. I'm not making this up. Here's a clip.
These storms have happened before.
All around the planet. But get this. Humanity not only fought Sharknados in the past, they won.
How?
But that, it's called the Harness of Dooku Waka.
A what?
Shark God.
Of course. Shark God.
The druids use the harness as defense against the Sharknados. And according to this map, it's saying it's hidden somewhere in this cave.
So you came here to get it?
Nope. We came here to get it.
Some sterling dialogue there, I know. Shark God, Mr. Allen, we're at that stage. So, as I say, this is a new writer that's come to the series this time, Scotty Mullen, who, and I've got his IMDb page in front of me, and Scotty Mullen's body of work includes such brilliant mockbusters as this year's King Arthur's Sword, The Fast and the Fierce... And
are these the ones that you find in Tesco for like £2?
Yeah, exactly.
Next door to the actual film.
Exactly. Yeah. You find like, Snakes Are Plain, then Snakes Are Train is next to it about half the price. Yeah, exactly that. Yeah. And so he's written a lot. Now he was casting director on the series before this. That's where this gets interesting. And he's now escalated from casting director to actual writer. And the weird thing is, he does bring a sort of an energy to this series and a sort of coherence that it's kind of lacked for the last couple. So the weird, increasingly science fiction concepts that the last two movies delved into are kind of cast aside here. in a way that still allows them to utilise portals and the fact that Tara Reid is a cyborg, without it seeming too forced within the sort of self-contained tone. And I want to remind you about that. Tara Reid is now a cyborg, an Iron Man-style flying cyborg, built by Gary Busey, then destroyed and rebuilt here by Olivia Newton-John. I say that again, because I can see the look on your face.
Just trying to process all that information.
Oh, yeah. It is, I mean, it's always about the cameos with these things, and this one's got...
It's got some good ones.
Oh, this one's got your Katie Price, Louis Spence, Chris Kattan, Bret Michaels, who for some reason is just randomly in the middle of London.
See, I thought Chris Kattan was, like, a new star of this, because for some reason it keeps popping up on Instagram, which are pictures of Chris Kattan promoting this
film. Because he's playing the Prime Minister of Britain in it, and he's
that's
awful.
Who you get, of course. You yeah, get yeah, an American from SNL.
Totally. You wouldn't just get Robert Atkin Downs or anyone like that, but, you know, so it is appalling. It is the casting in it is absolutely atrocious. Give him his dues. Ian Ziering, you know what, he's decided he's going to earn that half a mil, and he's really going for it here. Cassie Serbo as Nova is actually quite likeable as well. Tara Reid remains one of the most baffling presences before a camera since perhaps Lindsay Lohan in The Canyons. She's beyond dreadful. Tara Reid's version of a scream is, what? You've been in horror movies.
She is a cyborg, bro.
Oh, good. I mean, she's just this vacuum where acting talent goes to die.
Yeah.
But she's absolutely dreadful in this. I mean, this is a career low for Tara Reid, and that's...
You thought you would never say that.
Five movies into a Sharknado series.
What was the career high? Just being an American Pie?
Well, no. Van Wilder Party Liaison.
Okay, yeah.
That's totally... Of course totally it is, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to deny that I enjoy Tara Reid on the ice with a hockey stick. Never going to deny that, but still. So, back to Sharknado, which is more fun than the last two, but still unbelievable bilge that we now only review because it's tradition.
I think we'll be back next year.
We'll be back next year.
We'll be doing
number
six.
Sixnado, or whatever it's going to be called.
Yeah.
Six Arcnado. Six Harknado. That'll be it.
I think it's just going to be called Shark God.
Quite possibly.
That's a great name.
Oh, there's just some unbelievable stuff in this one. But yeah, just goofy fun.
Movie of the week.
Movie of the week stuff, totally. But hang on a minute. It says here that Scotty Mullen made his debut in 2014 with the Xbox exclusive The Co-Ed and the Zombie Stoner, which won the Telly Award for comedy. The award-winning writer of Sharknado.
Yes.
Okay.
Much in the same vein of, like, Oscar-winning film Suicide Squad.
And the Academy Award-winning writer of Batman and Robin.
Yeah,
totally that. So.
The Academy Award-winning masterpiece that is Norbert.
Exactly, yes, exactly that. Good God, we live in a cruel world, don't we?
We do.
We really do. Should we, on which note, should we do the box office top five?
I think we better add.
Number five.
Girls Trip.
Which... We were off the week that press screened.
Yeah. What is the past tense?
I don't know. Press screened. We'll go with it. Well, it's press screened.
What is grammar?
Well, we were off. And
do you know what? I've heard good things about this.
I have, but the reason we didn't see it is because the following week it wasn't in the top five, and it showed no indication that it was going to be, so there was no reason for either of us to see it.
Might stick around.
It might stick around, in which case we're now going to have to see it. So
I might check it out. I like Queen Latifah. Not particularly a fan of Jada Pinkett.
Fair enough.
But
okay.
I hear decent things.
I leave this one to you then.
Yeah.
Fair enough. On your head be it, good sir.
Number four.
Despicable Me 3.
So begrudging.
Well, yeah. 6 weeks, people. 6 weeks.
Did you see the John Oliver skit this last week when he kept showing pictures of White House of Stephen Miller and then a corresponding minion for each image?
And he said, fair enough, we could just find, like, one minion for this picture, but then we showed, like, eight photos.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, looking like different minions.
That guy is 31 years old.
Yeah, the same age as the Olsen twin.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. I mean,
there's only one.
Have you seen Paulie Shore playing Stephen Miller yet?
No. Have you seen Bill Hader playing the Mooch?
No, I have not. We need to share
this.
Okay, we need to swap later. Okay, so Despicable Me 3, which isn't a patch on the first one, isn't a patch on Minions, and frankly isn't as good as the second one, and I don't particularly rate the second one. It's the worst of the Despicable movies so far. and which is a shame because I really, really love the first one. It's still funny. You'll still have a few laughs, and there's still loads of, you know, happy, fun Minions moments for the kids. And, you know, I don't think they get enough time with the little girls who have always been the most fun, I think, in the Despicable Me movies. But, and they never quite explain where Russell Brand's character went, but...
Is he not in it anymore?
He's not in it.
The, like, scientist guy.
I think it's implied that he's gone somewhere else at one point, but it's never really totally explained. It is not up to the usual Despicable standards, but it's not awful.
Number 3.
Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets.
And 1,000 people who saw it. I'm kidding. But,
I have booked twice to see this film this week. Still haven't seen it.
What happened? It's worth your time.
I kept ordering tickets and being like, today will be the day. Yeah. Thank goodness I've got one of those cards, which means I can go as many times as I
wish. Yeah, of course, yeah.
And then just like, about to go and sit in the car and drive into town and go see the film and just being like, oh, I could just stay here and have some lunch and hang out and do some housework.
For shame.
I actually stayed and just cleaned the kitchen instead of seeing Valerian the other day.
Wow.
Just didn't fancy it.
You know what? You should make the effort. You should make the effort. It's not the fifth
Maybe
element.
I'll try.
It's not the fifth element. It's yeah. it's the eighth or ninth element.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's not up there with the fifth. Eighth or ninth element.
It's the ability to sense when someone's about to make some toast.
Exactly that. That's exactly what it is. Mm. It's I can feel it on the wind. Someone is about to pee. You know, it's that kind of sense. That's the eighth element. But that first 5 minutes, though, that's the first element. That is the best thing Luc Besson has or will ever shoot. The opening 5 minutes and 30 seconds are 5 minutes, 15 seconds or something like that. Absolutely amazing work of science fiction that should be loved, treasured, respected, analysed, and observed forever.
Number 2.
The Emoji Movie.
Which is every bit as sinister and evil and cruel and cynical and product placement-y and corporate pandering. And it's all of these things that you think
everything that you think it's going to be.
Everything you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
And it's like trying to adapt Heaven's Gate with Lego.
Oh, I would see that.
Would you see that? Heaven's Gate retold in Lego form. It has all the artistic merits
If I had the money that was spent on Heaven's Gate, I'd have invested all in a Lego remake of Heaven's Gate.
If the Lego Corporation decided to actually restage...
I would make a Cleopatra out of, like, Kinex or Meccano.
It has exactly that level of corporate cynicism behind it. Imagine doing that as a straight film. Right, not realize, you know, under the assumption that no one realized you're trying to sell them Lego, and you've basically got the Emoji Movie, which annoyingly though is kind of funny, and I laughed and I liked it, but I feel bad for that at times because I know it's horrible. It is an awful, awful work of terrible, terrible cinema, and yet I laughed at it. And
you feel dirty?
I wanted a shower with steel wool afterwards. That's how bad I felt.
Number 1,
Dunkirk.
Which I felt really good about enjoying, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
I've not met anyone who didn't like it.
I have.
Oh, tell them. I know people online who didn't like it, but...
Yeah. But the thing is, like, no one seems to, like, outwardly dislike it.
It's a great movie.
We just have loads of issues, down to the lack of, like, minority cast members or...
Or women.
Or women, which is a completely separate discussion, but we should have later on.
We did have it briefly last week, I think.
Yeah, there was a thing in the media.
Yeah, the Marie Claire critic, I forget her name. But no, I love Dunkirk, though. I think it's an example as to why Christopher Nolan is the name he is. I think it shows off his assembled dream team, his cinematographer, Hans Zimmer on music. Who's the cinematographer on these now? I forget now.
Hoyt van Hoytema.
That's it. How do you forget the name Hoyt van Hoytema? What's wrong with me?
Him and Wally Pfister, great names.
I know.
You don't forget these names.
I think that's how Christopher Nolan picks his cinematographers. Give me a list.
Yeah.
Shooty
McCool.
Exactly, yeah. So, like, Fisty McBone will have him.
No, that is a guy that does porn music.
That absolutely is. It shows off everything that's great about Christopher Nolan, and it puts it in just the perfect package. It's got the perfect amount of Tom Hardy. It's got just the right amount of Michael Caine, which is just his voice. And I loved it. I loved it. I can't wait to see it again. I need to see it again. Are you going to see it another time? Or
I've seen it twice.
Oh, you've seen it twice?
I think I probably will. Yeah, my wife is getting one of those fancy cards.
Oh, is she getting one as well now?
She's going to get one next week, so...
God, you're a regular cinephile couple, aren't you?
I know, this is like us 6 years ago when we first got together and all we would do is just watch films.
Fair play. On which note, why not start with Dunkirk?
With the latest film news and reviews, this is Offscreen, the on-screen radio show.
And we're back. So, Mr. Allen, where to next?
To Finland.
To Finland?
To see Tom. Yes. Which isn't the most Finnish name.
It's not, is it? No.
Yeah, and it's not spelled with like a little... What's it called?
Umlaut. So, Tom of Finland.
My brain just went.
Which follows a man from Basildon named Eric. I kid, of course. So, Tom of Finland is the story of Tom of Finland. If you've never heard of him, he's the artist who you probably have actually seen his work. Hmm. He's quite an iconic illustrator and artist. Came up with a lot of famous gay iconography. Very comic booky, muscular men in what you would define as sort of Freddie Mercury's black leather phase.
Yeah.
A lot of that look.
One of my favourite Mercury phases.
I'm partial to the Spanish bullfighter look, personally.
Everyone is. Yeah, we did like Barcelona. I like that full suit when he did.
My favourite Mercury is Bullfighter Mercury, totally.
Fascinating for a band.
Bullfighter Mercury.
What a tangent we are on.
So he came with a lot of this stuff, and... it is the story of how he came about, how he came out of the army post World War II, basically lived a repressed, very closeted life, never really found the fulfillment that he wanted to for many years, and then enters into a relationship that happens to coincide with, do you know what? I happen to do these illustrations that I have to take my name off of, and he adopts a pseudonym, which is Tom of Finland, and his new relationship gives him the confidence to actually put forward this artwork into the world, try and get it published, and he becomes an icon. Round about the point of the AIDS epidemic starting up, he finally gets to become an icon. It's about how you get from A to B. Because obviously, there's no real spoiler of the story. Tom, if it kind of tells you minute one, this is kind of where this is going to go. And if you know the history, then obviously you know that. Great performance in there by Pekka Strong, who I'm not familiar with. I'd never seen him in anything before this. Watch me check now, and it's going to turn out he's been in like 4 Michael Bay movies or something. But because that's always how these work. So Finnish actor, Pekka Strong, who now looking at his IMDb list, no, I've not seen any of these. Naked Harbor absolutely sounds like the kind of film I would have seen. No, not a clue, but he's absolutely fantastic in it. And he gets to play the full gambit from, you know, in his early 20s through to his older age. And he goes through the Freddie Mercury Great Leather phase as well, because that is a look, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm waiting for me to go through that phase.
I would love a circumstance in which I could wear the Freddie Mercury leather phase look.
And pull it off. Probably. I mean, if it's a hot day, you won't be able to.
No, absolutely not. But
stuck to you like glue.
I've seen that episode of Friends. I'm never getting the leather pants.
Well, it makes like a paste.
Exactly, yeah. It makes like a paste. So this comes to us from Doma Karakosa. Karukosi, sorry.
Oh, I thought you'd smash Karakoski.
I'm sorry.
You said it with such confidence.
I said it. This is the thing. If you sound confident, people will believe just about anything. Have you never seen the movie Slackers? Anyway, I am a commercial airline pilot. Anyway, so Dominic Karakoski. I'm there. Okay. Really well shot, really well realised, and the way it transitions through his ages, actually, weirdly, the style of the film kind of evolves with it, and it's a really clever way of doing it. So as you increasingly reach, you know, the more recent times, I think this kind of stops in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, as it reaches the more modern times, the style picks up, the fluidity amps up, the energy gets a bit more, and it becomes a little bit more, round about the point that disco music starts getting into it, you start getting into it in the same way, and it's a really well put together film, and I really liked it. I love the performance, though, at the centre of it. Pekka Strong, I think, is absolutely brilliant. Pekka Strong as, Tom of Finland, his real name is Tuukka Laaksonen, and
These are some great names.
I know. I'm terrible at this. But Tom of Finland himself, absolutely brilliant performance. Really, really loved it.
I'll check it out.
And real portrait of Europe at that time, which is something I hadn't really thought. Because the latest film, by the way, from Peccadillo, the LGBT film label, and who've been putting out some really strong films this last year, like Theo and Hugo.
Yeah,
remember that one?
Yeah.
Which was a really good drama that just happened to start with, you know, an unbroken 20-minute long gay orgy.
Yeah, just happens to be there.
It's just there. You're like, okay. Yeah.
We're in this.
I'm not sure how to describe this to people without saying, so there's a 20-minute long orgy, and then there's a film.
Yeah, so if that's not your bag, probably not going to enjoy this.
If you don't want a 20-minute orgy, maybe this film isn't for you.
Yeah.
But no, Tom of Finland, very, very worth seeing. Really interesting biopic. I really liked it. So news, what you got for me?
Well, should we move on to another documentary? Let's talk about this really quickly.
Oh, no, Dark Knight
is
not a documentary. I thought it was.
What?
It's not.
Twist.
I know. Utter twist, right?
I thought this was a doc.
No, it starts off, you would think it was from the beginning, but no, not a documentary at all. It is very much a dramatisation. So,
set it up.
Okay, we've not got a clip for this, by the way, I can understand why there isn't a clip for this.
Yeah.
Okay, I will get to that. So this is the story of six sets of strangers, six households in a suburb. We're never particularly told which suburb it is, but we keep referring to the incident in Aurora in 2012, when, if you remember, during the shooting of... during the release of the opening night, I think it was, of The Dark Knight Rises?
Yes.
When there was, obviously, the Aurora shooting and so many people were killed. This refers back to that and kind of shows you the evolution over the course of one day, how someone goes from point A to point C, being where you shoot up a multiplex. Now, the film doesn't quite feature that shooting. It is all about the lead up to the shooting. And it works as this sort of subdued art piece, basically chronicling the random things the victims did that day.
Right.
Yeah. Do you remember, what was the Michael B. Jordan film that got him all the acclaim at first?
Fruitvale Station.
Right, Fruitvale Station. Remember, Fruitvale Station. We all knew where Fruitvale Station was going to go.
Yes.
Okay, in this case, you obviously know where this is going to go.
Because Fruitvale Station, based on a true story.
Exactly. This, obviously, based on a true story as well. But in the same way that Fruitvale Station had to basically hinge its entire plot on, here's the random stuff he did that day.
Yeah.
Welcome to the same thing, six times over. Shot as a very lovely looking, but incredibly low energy indie film. And you come away from thinking, I don't know what the point of any of this is. I mean, you keep cutting back to one girl who's literally just doing yoga and taking selfies.
See, I can see it working with Fruitvale Station. I really, really love that film.
In the case of Fruitvale Station, you were focusing on one character. It made sense.
Yeah, here, and then when those events happen, they made it all the more impactful because of what you've seen previous.
In this case, just imagine the most flavourless feature film adaptation of 23 short films about Springfield. Mm. And you'd basically have kind of where you're going with this. The problem is you come away from it and you do think, I wasn't involved, I wasn't particularly interested. It looked lovely, but you couldn't hold my attention at any point. And by the time you built to your actual point, it was 4 minutes before the end of the film, and you pretty much cut straight to the end credits. So, not for me.
No, I would absolutely watch a documentary about this.
A documentary about this would be...
And about the fallout of it. Because I was working at a cinema, obviously in the UK, when this happened. I mean, I was working at the one in Cardiff, for Dark Knight Rises. I was there for the opening day, and we had to take, like, extra security precautions and measures in case something terrible occurred.
This film is not what that story deserves. No. That's the problem. Yeah. Because I think that story is a really important thing in the last few years. And the story deserved better than this film gives it. And frankly, that's a shame.
With the latest film news and reviews, this is Offscreen, the on-screen radio show.
And we're back. So, Mr. Allen, you got some news for me before we do Atomic Blonde? What's in the news?
I have word that our boy Chewy.
Chewy?
Chewy the Edge.
Chewy the Edge?
Chewy Tall, Edgier 4. For people that aren't as close as me and you. He's going to be voicing Scar in Lion King, pretty great.
That is pretty great, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's
pretty perfect.
He's one of like three pieces of casting for that this week.
Yeah, so he's your first. I think you needed someone. You needed like a Shakespearean thesp.
Yeah, he has got those Shakespearean chops, hasn't he?
Yeah, and he can also sing, so he can do Be Prepared.
That's true. We have all seen Kinky Boots. We know we know he can. Whatever Lola wants, Lola gets.
Lola gets red. Red.
In my house, it's literally true. Whatever Lola wants, Lola gets.
Of course it is.
Of course it is.
Of course it is. Other pieces of Lion King casting news. Sarabi, so that is Simba's mum, will be played by Alfred Woodard.
Which is
who I love.
Fantastic casting. And also, is it me or does Alfred Woodard exist in a time bubble?
Yeah, she doesn't seem to have aged since when she was in Scrooge.
Yeah, which was 88.
Yeah.
So it's nearly 30 years.
Pretty
and
crazy.
She's the same age.
Yeah.
In Luke Cage. It's weird.
Oh,
that
she's
one.
So good in Luke
she's
Cage.
She's so good,
well.
Isn't she, in Luke Cage?
That needs a rewatch.
Oh, yeah, Luke, she's so, so good.
And then finally, we have a Rafiki.
We do, and it's not Morgan Freeman.
Or Forest Whitaker.
Or Forest Whitaker.
Yeah.
Jungle Whitaker in this case. Jungle Whitaker?
Yeah, Jungle Whitaker or Desert Whitaker.
Desert Whitaker, yes. Desert Whitaker. Yeah.
Yeah. Is John Carney.
Who's the Black Panther, isn't he? The first, the senior Black Panther in Civil War.
He is T'Challa's dad.
T'Chaka.
T'Chaka.
Yeah, it's T'Chaka and the son is T'Challa.
Yeah, I forgot what else he's been in, but he's been around for years and years.
I know what he's been in.
What's that?
The Ghost in the Darkness.
Oh, of course.
In which he faced off against the lions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that needs a rewatch as well.
Oh, man. That's the film I keep meaning to rewatch, film. And I keep forgetting. What is that film I want to rewatch? I can't remember. It's The Ghost in the Darkness. So it's late at night, I've got a few beers, and I think, what do I want to rewatch? Can't remember. I know, I'll just put an old Workaholics episode on instead. So yeah.
Next time I feel like that, Michael Douglas, Valley Kilmer's.
Valley's Kilmer's.
Valley's Kilmer's, yo, in the jungle.
Oh yeah, love that movie. Saw it by accident because Star Trek First Contact was sold out. But there you go.
Really?
Yeah, totally. That's the reason I saw it.
What a time to be alive when First Contact was in such demand that it was sold out.
I know. Well, you know, I lived in the Middle East at the time, and there was only one screen in a cinema back then, so...
Simpler times.
Simpler times. Yeah, you used to have one big building that was one screen, and they had, like, a balcony and
when
opera
I was a
booths,
boy.
And opera booths. Like, yeah, opera booths in the cinema. It was great.
But, can you imagine that today, kids?
No, I saw Twister in that cinema. But
I saw Twister in the cinema.
I remember Quake finally got a multiplex in about 1999 because I went to see episode one for the fifth or sixth time there.
I remember dragging my mum to go see episode one and she was not happy.
I remember, I was only 16, I walked into that cinema to see episode one carrying a Domino's pizza.
Really?
But, yeah, I just walked in. No one questioned it.
You'll get arrested.
No one questioned it, but of course it cost £3 to see a film back then, so, you know... That was a full whack, you know.
Yeah. Right, ticket for film, put a down payment on a house.
Now you take out a small bank loan to see a movie, or you get like a subscription card to your local multiplex, and
that's what I do. And then buy tickets for Valerian that you never end up reading.
Exactly that. Yes, yeah. Of course, you buy tickets that you never see.
Yeah,
but I don't know, Valerian, man, you need to see it. So good.
I will see it. I was also going to watch Atomic Blonde, and I wish I did because then I could join in with this conversation even more.
I know. I thought you would see it a couple of days ago while I was away, but.
I was ill, unfortunately.
Ah, fair enough.
Struck down with lurk.
So Atomic Blonde is the latest film from David Leitch, one of the co-directors of the first John Wick. He wound up becoming the sole director of John Wick Chapter 2.
And he's now doing Deadpool 2.
And he's now doing Deadpool 2. But first, there's Atomic Blonde, which... And here's the weird thing about Atomic Blonde. It's based on a comic book called The Coldest City. They don't market it as a comic book movie, but when you're watching the film... You feel it. You feel this is clearly a comic book movie. It stars Charlize Theron as an undercover MI6 agent named Lorraine Broughton. In the late 80s, in fact, it is the couple of days surrounding the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Right.
The wall coming down. She is sent to Berlin to investigate when one of her fellow agents, there's only two MI6 agents in Berlin. One of them is murdered, and he so happens to have been in the pursuit of a stolen list of all the double agents in, you know, working the area, basically, because this list that only exists in movies that seems to keep going missing.
So far, so Skyfall.
So Skyfall, yeah. But you know the one, this goes back to like the first Mission Impossible movie with the knock list. Remember that one?
Yeah.
On a zip disc. Was it on a zip disc?
It was.
Yeah.
Because of the 90s.
Because of the 90s. Yeah. But you know, this list, it's a microfilm in this case, hidden inside a watch.
Right.
It's a microfilm inside a watch that contains everybody's files and all that stuff. And this has gone missing. The murdered MI6 agent was in pursuit of this. So Lorraine has gone to Berlin right as the wall's about to come down, purely to track down this list, but also to find out what happened to her murdered colleague. Here is a clip of her arrival and pickup by a pair of agents in Berlin.
So, is this your first time in Berlin?
Yes.
Well, it's a remarkable time to be here. Wonderful music, superb nightlife, marvelous restaurants. You must try this central cafe for a drink. You'll need it later. You remember Mr. Bremovich, don't you? Of course you do. Well, he's very curious what you're doing here in Berlin.
So, hyper-stylized violence, excessive, sort of, edit-free fight scenes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Very much where the camera does not break, it flows with the movement of the scenes. In fact, its marketing actually pushes that angle. The marketing tends to show one central fight scene in about half of its entirety. It goes on a lot longer than the marketing would suggest. And that's the strength of the film, really, is the fight scenes and the just the hyper-violence.
Yeah, that's what I've heard about it. It's very, like a very good time.
Very much like in the way that John Wick was. Now, this it obviously has a lot of overlap with John Wick. It has that hyperviolence. It has that heightened sense heightened sensibility, that certain irreverent tone. The only problem is, unlike John Wick, this forgets to have any fun with it. What you want is the John Wick of spies. What you get is really more of a, I don't know, more of a V for Vendetta does born. If you can imagine that. But without the knowing irony and humour, it feels too deadpan for its own good. Now, the problem is, you would rather that Charlize Theron was playing the deadpan one, as she indeed is, and that everyone around her was then sort of hamming it up and having fun with it.
Yeah.
That would work. The film doesn't quite do that. Now, James McAvoy comes perilously close to having fun with it, but other than that, it's not really something that gets done. And you come away from it thinking, it's a bit overly convoluted, it's too po-faced for what it is. And really, it's not that engaging outside of its fight scenes. There are things in it to love, though. I mean, the style of it, you can't question. It is an incredibly stylish film. It has one very admirable trait in that it takes a romantic relationship between Charlize Theron and Sofia Boutella and plays it as if it is any other romance in any other one of these spy movies. Mm. The fact that it's two women is not really even a factor in it, save for the fact that it is shot periodically through the male gaze, a very, very obvious male gaze as well. I like Sofia Boutella in it, though, actually. I think she's got some charisma that really works here. The setting of it, you can't fault. It does create a genuine atmosphere. The problem is they don't have much fun in that atmosphere. And David Leitch can shoot the hell out of it, and he can have it edited, brilliantly. It just doesn't quite come together. And ultimately, you're sitting thinking, the soundtrack's really good. There's some great fight scenes.
It's a really good cast.
Really good
really
cast.
Great cast.
Your favourite there? Johnny B. Goodman?
Johnny B. Goodman. Toby Jones.
Toby Jones. Love Toby Jones.
Tobias Jones.
Tobias Jones, yeah.
James McAvoy.
I love James McAvoy. I think he's great fun in it. Oh, who else was it in? Roland Moeller from Land of Mine last week.
Oh.
Roland Moeller turns up. Remember the great name?
There's some amazing names.
There are some great names, aren't there? Roland Moeller.
Like, that could be his character name as well.
Well, he played Rasmussen, if you remember, in Land of Mine. But yeah, he's one of the big villains here. Bill Sarsgaard is in this.
Really?
Eddie Marson is in this.
I didn't know Eddie Marson was in
Eddie
this.
Eddie Marson. He's the guy that has the list.
Cool.
So yeah.
Cool.
But yeah, there's a great cast in there. James Faulkner is the head of MI6. There's a great cast that you will really enjoy seeing. There's a lot of great little moments in it. The problem is the film on a whole doesn't really keep you engaged, and the great moments come more as a surprise and more of a break than the rest of it. But it is good fight scenes, great soundtrack, decent cast, and ultimately nothing else. It sure as hell ain't John Wick, and you do come away from it thinking, I can feel the pulp sensibility with this more than I could with John Wick, because I was having too much fun with John Wick and John Wick 2 to an extent that it didn't make me want to stop and analyse it. This does make you sit there pondering, looking at it, thinking, oh no, I can sort of see the seam in that and that. I can see the flaw in this.
That's
I saw this with John Coulson and Kelly Needham last night.
Mm.
And to be honest, I think we were all kind of glazed over by it. I know Kelly was for sure. But we were all kind of glazed over by it, unless there was a fight scene or a really great musical number in there. And not enough of the Freddie Mercury Leatherface, which quite clearly, I mean, it's a movie set in, 1989
yeah, and
Germany.
It's been nearly all of the films we've been talking about today.
Yeah, I mean, we need more Freddie Mercury Leatherface.
I mean, when is Bohemian Rhapsody finally coming out? We need to see Rami Malek.
We need that movie. We do. We need that movie.
We need it.
Is Bryan Singer still directing that, isn't he?
Yeah.
As far as I know.
Rami Malek is still Freddie Mercury, at least for today.
For today, until it changes tomorrow, because it seems to keep doing.
A lot of people have been Freddie Mercury.
Oh, God, it's going to be Miles Teller before the end of the month.
Yeah,
but
and at which point we'll both be like, done.
Yeah, I'll be like, ding, I'm out. But is it called Bohemian Rhapsody, the movie?
Yeah, the last time it was. Last time we said anything about it.
Why can't they just call it A Kind of Magic? Why?
Yeah, nothing else. I mean, if you've got to name it after a song.
Or my personal favourite, Who Wants to Live Forever?
Yeah.
That would be a good title for a
video. I'm going slightly mad. It'd rather be really good.
Or I Want to Break Free. That's a title for a biopic.
All of their song titles could be great names for film. One Vision is a great name for a film.
Oh, that is a good one.
Yeah. Hammer to Fall.
Somebody to Love.
Yeah. Fear Norma doesn't really work. It's Seven Seas Rye.
Kinda, yeah. You're My Best Friend would be the worst possible title for it.
That's the sequel.
Yeah, that's the sequel. Yeah, totally.
We're filming just about Freddie Mercury and his cats, because he had loads of cats.
He did have loads of cats.
Yeah.
I believe he left most of his estates to his cats. But his cats and his platonic female BFF, I believe, are the beneficiaries of Freddie Mercury's estate.
Yeah.
But
that's what we get in the sequel.
That's what we get in the sequel, yeah, totally.
You're my best friend.
That's when Zoe Kazan plays the... Anyway, so Atomic Blonde, not my film of the week, unfortunately.
Shame.
I wasn't overly taken with it.
What is it going to be? Probably Sharknado 5.
I
jokingly said it, but it might be.
I'm going to give it to Tom of Finland, actually. Right. I think Tom of Finland's the film of the week for me.
Not Ian of Zeering.
Not Sir Ian of Zeering, no.
Yeah.
Ian Zeering of the Connecticut Zeerings.
The Connecticut, yeah.
The Pasadena Zeerings.
Yeah. Of Tom Reed of the Illinois Reeds.
Exactly, yeah. But no, the Tom of Finland, definitely this week. I think that's going to be like a Curzon-type release, Curzon or Showroom, art house cinema release.
Like it.
But if you can see it, if you're going to the multiplex, logically, you're probably going to wind up seeing Atomic Blonde, or...
It sounds like they'll have a good time just seeing all the fight scenes.
I think so, although we didn't get to review Annabelle Creation this week,
Nutjob 2 is out today as well.
Yeah, and I think, to be honest... Annabelle may well have been our film of the week.
I've heard really good things. I'm going to see it. I'm definitely going to see it.
I'm going to try and catch it.
And I would imagine I'll be in the top five.
I think you must see it. I'll explain why in the podcast extras, why I think you particularly have to see it. Because there's a thematic connection with you. But I will get there. I'll get there, don't you worry. So next week, fun to come. We've got the anime movie Napping Princess. We've got the Stanley Tucci directed Final Portrait. Next week.
Oh, yeah.
Is that Jeffrey Rush and Armie Hammer, I want to say?
Yes.
Right, we've got an Inconvenient Sequel.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, they keep putting it down as Inconvenient Truth 2, and they're wondering why no one can find any records of it. It's because it's an Inconvenient Sequel, that's why. Yeah. The Dark Tower, which has been very dubiously received in the US. It has not had good write-ups.
Shame.
We have this is the thing, I'm covering those, and you're covering the other half of the screenings.
I know. How exciting.
I know, you're doing of pressure.
I'm going to the Big Smoke.
Yes,
I'm going
to
London. I'm going to the show.
And you will be starting with The Odyssey.
Yeah.
Starring Lambert Wilson, which is meant to be great. You're going to see The Untamed, also meant to be great. You're going to be seeing Everything, also meant to be great.
Is it? Is it supposed to be good? I don't know. We'll see.
Well, this thing, I don't know anything about it. I just hear good things. One thing I do know about, and this will be the last film you see on your day of pressure, will be The Hitman's Bodyguard. And I am so jealous of you for this.
I am excited.
So badly want to see
this. That's a good way to end as well.
It is. It's a good way to end a day. So we'll get to talk about all these and more next week off screen. Meanwhile, there's competitions for Blu-rays of The Transfiguration, a film you absolutely must see. Go on to onscreenfilm.com, go in our competition section for that. Don't forget to check out the podcast edition for more ramblings, including why Case should see Annabelle Creation and our Moment of Cage, more film news, etc. In the meanwhile, this has been a Canny Store production for On Screen. I've been Van Connor.
I've been an Atomic Blonde.
And we'll be back.
Just show me the way to get out of here, and I'll be on my way.
You've been listening to Offscreen. For more news and reviews, visit onscreenfilm.com.
So, I just showed you a trailer for a certain amazing film that I've seen recently.
Okay. Did you see did you say this because it's one of the How Did This Get Made podcast episodes?
I did, because I'd never heard of it.
Okay.
And my life has been a waste before that.
I will admit, now that you've shown me the trailer, I do feel like there is a hole in my life that I didn't know was there before, and the piece of the universe that fits into that hole is this movie.
All the planets have aligned
yeah.
because someone shot a bazooka rocket launcher at the planets.
Exactly that. This is the convergence from Thor, and the only thing that can come through all the dimensions is this movie, Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
Hard Ticket to Hawaii, the 1987 Andy Sidaris.
Yeah.
Is it an action thriller? Masterpiece.
I don't know. Kind of. You could call it just like an action thriller, an action adventure film.
That just happens to be the most lantern-jawed schlock fest anybody's
amazing.
Ever seen.
Amazing.
Okay.
It's incredible. So it kind of centres around these two female agents.
The women are the leads.
The women are the leads.
Okay, yeah. The marketing doesn't make that clear.
The poster is just, it's one of the male characters.
The poster is Ron Moss.
Yeah, whose character name is Rowdy Abilene.
That's amazing. Because,
of course. And then the ladies are at the side of his big face.
Okay, I just assumed that Rowdy Abilene was the lead because he gets most of the poster.
That is quite progressive.
Okay, fair enough.
Yes. The ladies are essentially the lead, and they like uncover sort of like a drug deal gone bad. The drug deal, by the way, is just about weed. It's about marijuana.
Marijuana, because this is 87, so that's like the worst thing in the world. Okay.
Yeah.
Hang on, the crack epidemic was going on at this point.
I know.
But it's marijuana. Well, yeah. Okay, fair enough. I'm just going to say, white filmmaker 1987, probably yeah. just trying to shift attention away from coke, I think, at that point.
Coke is good, weed is bad.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, they kind of like uncover this, and yeah, they have leads.
Are they ninjas?
Not ninjas per se, but there are people that have ninja skills, and it's not really unveiled.
Of course, because it was 87.
Yeah,
because everyone knew karate.
There's this white guy with... Like, I don't think you see him wear a shirt. Or maybe you see him wear a shirt, but the shirt is unbuttoned. And that's as close as you get to see him wearing an actual shirt.
So he was like Seagaling, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was Seagaling around the time that Seagal was doing Seagaling.
Wow.
Better. And he's got a ponytail as well, this guy.
It's because Seagaling.
Yeah.
So yeah.
This same guy gets shot in the chest whilst driving. And he's fine.
Doesn't he say, in the clip I've seen, doesn't he say, oh, I've had worse?
Yeah.
He's like, you've been shot in the lung, dog.
Yeah, he says, I've had worse, but I live.
Wow. Right, so I need to talk about the star of this movie, who is an actor who's dear to me because he starred for 28 years in the US soap The Bold and the Beautiful, of which I have seen an alarming number of episodes. And that actor is the chisel-faced Ron Moss. Ron with two N's, incidentally.
It's like a face made of marble.
He does. He looks like a Greek god. He would mortify Stan Winston.
He looks like he's got abs in his face.
He does. He has face abs. Fabs, if you will. Fabs, but not in the fat abs sense, the face abs sense. But
it is amazing.
This film looks bonkers. Yeah.
There's a couple of highlights.
Okay,
so there's so many plot points, so many subplot points.
Please spoil nothing for me. I'm going to enjoy the hell out of this later. I'm showing this trailer forever, by the way, to everyone.
I will spoil nothing, but like, I mean, you saw in the trailer, there's a shot of a snake.
Okay.
The snake is sort of one of the big bads of the film. The snake was bred in a lab where there were cancer-infected rats.
Cancer-infected?
Yes.
Rats.
So,
okay.
So the rats were given cancer.
Okay.
And then the snake ate the rats, so now the snake has cancer. So the snake has 36 hours to live. But whilst it's like it's broken out of its cage, it's going on like a killing rampage.
Right. Is this like a regular sized snake, or is this like anaconda snake?
He's kind of varying in length, if I'm
honest. Okay, that makes total sense.
In some shots it is huge.
Right.
Like an anaconda. And then others, it's really coiled up and
so when the snake bites you, do you get cancer? Is that the thing?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But then also, you should die instantly.
Oh, so it's instant cancer.
Instant cancer.
That's ridiculous. You can tell this came out in the 80s.
It's
really
great.
Can.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you know, it amazes me when you look back at like certain 80s movies, just how uninformed they are about certain realities of the world. A good example in film is always AIDS. If you ever movie,
well, that's the thing. I thought if it was going to have any illness, it would have HIV,
especially a lethal, weaponizable one in the 80s.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you see, in the 80s, Hollywood producers were still ignorant enough to actually believe that AIDS was a gay-only virus. So they probably wouldn't necessarily have used it.
Did you pull up some of the film's quotes as well? Did you add a couple of?
There's some doozies.
There were some absolute.
There's some amazing. Absolute doozies. Yeah.
What was that one about the, a couple of doobies? The guy said.
Oh wow, he must be on some really strong doobies.
Really strong doobies.
That's a classic. My personal favourite though comes from this line: if brains were bird shit, you'd have a clean cage.
Yeah.
Wow. Just give it up to writer director Andy Sidaris.
One of my favourite ones is Another Man's Trash is Another Man's Lunch.
Wow. Isn't that post-coital as well?
That is post-coital.
You know, in the trivia section.
To which she then replies, "You son of a bee."
She actually say bee.
Well, no. But I am self-editing.
Oh, okay, that would have been great. My favourite one, in the trivia section on its IMDb page, it does tell you the yacht of the villain, Mr. Chang.
Played by a white man.
Belonged in real life to Glenn A. Larson.
Who's that?
Producer of more or less every great 80s TV series. Amazing. And when you look at that trailer, actually, it's the kind of thing Glenn Larson probably would have produced.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised actually to find out he's involved somewhere.
Possibly. But yeah, watch this and then watch the other 11 films that are linked to this.
Because this has a cinematic universe.
Long before Marvel.
So does my boy Ron Moss turn up in any of the others?
I don't know. Worth checking out.
I need to pull up his IMDb page right now. Come on, Ron Moss, come to me. It's not loading. We'll come back to it. I passed too slow. Anyway, but yeah, I want to know if Ron Moss turns up. Is he the Tony Stark of this cinematic universe? I demand to know. Yeah.
I think so.
Is he the Nick Fury? That's what I want to know.
He just goes, recruited other babes.
So I have seen the trailer for Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
And you've seen one of the key scenes.
I have seen its key clip, known as Skateboard Assassin. Yeah. Which is mind-blowingly good, and you must see this 1 minute, 43-second long clip immediately. If you don't watch the trailer, just watch the clip.
Watch that clip.
Skateboard Assassin from Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
That clip does more than the trailer does.
It does. It really sells you on the tone. But yeah, I'm going to check this movie out tonight. I think everyone should check it. We'll all regroup next week.
You can get the whole thing on YouTube.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, well, we'll all regroup for next week.
Yeah.
And we'll all compare notes.
We'll check it out.
Please tweet us your thoughts on Hard Ticket to Hawaii. Sorry to the people at How Did This Get Made for kind of hijacking this.
Yeah, we're kind of piggybacking this, but thank you for bringing it to our attention.
Thank you so much to the How Did This Get Made guys for introducing us to this wonderful film.
Yeah,
which I can't wait to sit and enjoy. This is my new Sin City. This is just the film I'm going to sit and enjoy. Sold. So in the meanwhile, you got some news for me?
Yeah, I'm going to kind of tie it together a little bit. So from one really terrible but amazing film to another.
Is there going
to
be a Ron Moss biopic? Is that what it is?
Starring James Franco.
This
is what it does. So there is a film about The Room coming out that we know quite excited about.
Tommy Wiseau film that has become a sort of cult classic for being The Room, awful. Yes. And now they've made a movie about the making of this movie that's regarded as being awful.
Yeah, so there is a book written by one of the co-stars called The Disaster Artist. And now there is a film about that book. So about the
Which I think starts screening, hasn't it, the film?
Yeah, and it's been doing really, really well.
Is Seth Rogen a producer on it? Or is
Seth Rogen's a producer. James Franco directed it, wrote it, and is playing Tommy Wiseau to, like, an amazing effect.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
You tear me apart, Lisa.
Yeah. I did not hit her. So James Franco has now said that Tommy Wiseau, 99.9% approves of the film. And the reason why it's not got like the 400%
is
because he said the lighting was a little off.
Oh, okay.
Because apparently The Room lighting is much better than this actual film's.
Oh, gee. How has he lacked that amount of perspective?
It's amazing.
That's stunning.
Yeah, but this has got such a good cast as well.
It has, isn't Dave Franco?
Dave Franco is playing Greg Sestero, who plays Mark in the film. Greg Sestero wrote the book, and I've met him, and he's really nice.
Yeah, you went to a couple of events for The Room, didn't you?
Yeah, I've been to a couple of Room screening. I feel like if you have never seen The Room, you need to see it with loads of other people.
Yeah, I think so.
That's a way to experience.
I had that experience with you and the movie Vampire's Kiss with Nicolas Cage, which I'd never actually gotten to finish. I never watched it all the way through, and I saw it at that screening, and it was a great time.
It was wonderful, because in that screening, it was preceded by loads of Cage clips, loads of interviews, like the infamous Toe Wogan one, where he like karate kicks his way onto the set and then starts throwing money at people.
Incidentally, when we get to this week's moment of Cage, it is from Nicolas Cage's trip to Kazakhstan recently.
Yeah.
It's his goodbye. I just want to point out, if you've not seen any of Nicolas Cage's Kazakhstani outfits, please do check them out. They are amazing. When he departed Kazakhstan, he was wearing a bright green blazer, the likes of which must be seen to be believed. Yeah. Only Nicolas Cage, and to a lesser extent Paulie Shaw, could possibly have pulled off this blazer. It is bonkers and should be just regarded as the marvel that it truly is. Please look up this blazer.
We need it.
We do. We need it. By the way, James Wan apparently is not going to direct the third Conjuring movie.
Yeah, if that makes sense. It's kind of powerful.
He said he's too busy.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
He'll be a producer.
It's fine.
Yeah, because he did that with Insidious.
He did, didn't he? Did he direct the first one and then hand it over?
No, he directed the second one as well.
Oh, he directed the second one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So. And then I'm not sure who directed the third one.
I am absolutely not sure.
I'm not too sure off the top of my head.
And yet, I'm pretty sure I went to an elaborate press event for that, so I probably should know. Okay, bad me.
Yes, you did. Have you heard about this? Because this is kind of brilliant. Riz Ahmed is going to be in Venom.
Yeah, I heard this. That's brilliant, isn't it?
We don't know who.
Well,
here's the thing. So
he's not Carnage, apparently.
He's not Carnage.
They've said he's not. Apparently, they did consider that. They did consider casting him as Carnage, but then
he's red for Carnage, but he's not going to be Carnage. But he is another key figure. And apparently, other people were reading for the same role: Matt Smith,
oh,
Pedro Pascal.
Okay.
And Matthias Schoenaerts, Matty Shoes.
Riz Ahmed beat out Matty Shoes? Wow.
But, like, all four of those guys I really like.
I'm just going to put it out there. Amazing. This reimagined J. Jonah Jameson really sounds intriguing.
Doesn't it?
It does. This is their new version of Robbie Robertson or J. Jonah Jameson.
I wonder who it could be.
I don't know.
I feel like you don't go for, like, actors of that caliber unless you want to have them around for a couple of projects.
No, I would say that, yeah.
If you're trying to build this Spideyverse or whatever it's called.
You know what I didn't realise? In the current comics, the new Venom is Flash Thompson.
Really?
Yeah, in the current comics. And he's more of a sort of Punisher-style armed superhero.
That's kind of cool.
But, that's intriguing. I'd like to see...
Instead of the kid from Grand Budapest Hotel.
I'd like to see Tony Rivioli.
Yeah.
How do you say his name?
I think you did it right.
Rivioli?
Yeah, don't call him Tony Ravioli.
Tony Ravioli.
I'm sure he got that when he was in school.
Oh, I'm sure he did. I'd like to see Tony Ravioli as a new armed Venom, though. Like, taking on John Bernthal's Punisher and things like that. But it'll never happen. Tim Miller, who directed Deadpool.
Yes.
He's got something of a legendary project coming up, actually.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see if this actually happens, because he seems to be signing up for loads of stuff. Like, he was doing the Sonic movie at one point.
Yeah, he seems to be Del Toro-ing a bit, doesn't he?
A little bit.
I'm booked up till 2039.
Yeah, but I mean, you make Deadpool, you make all that money, you're going to have all the offers.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. But so he wants to do an adaptation of William Goldman's novel Neuromancer, which... Okay, I'm good with that.
Hasn't a lot of people tried to adapt this in the past?
It's one of those people have attempted it and it's just never happened. It's like Akira. It's just one of those adaptations that's just never going to happen. Stop trying. If it ever does happen, odds are you forced, you know, a square peg through a round hole and you probably shouldn't have. So stop it. This is one of the seminal works of cyberpunk.
Yeah.
But this is like Ghost in the Shell in that way that was a seminal work of cyberpunk and probably should never have actually been adapted.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like Ghost in the Shell should have been done. Like, should have been another reboot, should have been another version of it. Probably not the one that we got.
Probably not. No.
Probably not that.
But,
I love this. I want it to happen. Please let it happen. Dolph Lundgren. Ivan Drago.
Yeah. We know he's coming back.
He's coming back.
We knew from last week, so Sloan confirmed that he was coming back on Instagram, I think.
Have we already spoken about this?
I'm going to carry on
talking about it then.
Well, fine. Well, what's been confirmed now is Rocky and Drago will fight.
Yes, because he said it wouldn't be a part two without Drago, would it? I'm going to punch him. You know I got to hit Drago once. Which is, yeah. But it's interesting as well, because the last time that we saw Ivan Drago, in that entire film, he has four lines of dialogue.
I must break you.
Yeah. You will lose. If he dies, he dies.
Exactly, yeah. One. I think Bridget Nielsen got more lines than Dolph Lundgren did.
Yeah, she gets all the, like, he's just doing his job kind of thing. He's not taking drugs, but of course he's taking drugs.
Oh, of course he is. He was a roid rage all the time. That was the whole point.
Absolutely.
In his weird red carpet training room.
Yeah.
Which was just...
Going around that weird track.
Going around that track that runs round the room.
Yeah.
In what's clearly a hotel basement somewhere. And it's like he was trained in the Moscow Hilton.
Yeah.
You know, it's the weirdest little setup, isn't it? It's like three machines in the centre of a massive hotel basement conference room.
Yes.
And they've just put a red carpet around the outside and he jogs
it's supposed
it.
To look like the most high-tech complex you've ever seen as well.
Yeah. And he just sort of looks like the Super Shredder version of Gary Barlow.
That's the weirdest
thing.
If Gary Barlow went like Super Saiyan. Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, it has been how many years? Like at least 30.
It is 31 years since Rocky IV.
Since Rocky IV.
Mm, 31
and
years.
And Dolph, I mean, his English is great.
Well, don't get me wrong, he's a better actor now than he was then.
Yeah. I finally watched Tour de Pharmacy the other day.
Oh, did you?
The Andy Samberg Tour de France thing. Yeah.
Doesn't he play old John Cena?
Yeah.
He plays John Cena when he's
perfect.
Old.
Perfect. Yeah.
Which is good casting. Yeah.
He's like, I've never taken steroids in my life.
John Cena is amazing in that movie.
He's incredible.
He's great, isn't he?
I'm so happy that John Cena has become this now.
Well, you know, he is the new Mark Wahlberg after all.
So. Looks like Mark Wahlberg ate Mark Wahlberg.
Yep, and in Transformers, who knows, that might actually be the case.
That
I would
could
love
be at
it
one point.
If he's playing Cade Yeager's dad, because it is set in the 80s. Think about it. Think about it.
It could be.
He could be. He could be Yeager Sr. Oh my God, please let him be Cade Yeager Sr.
Cade Yeager Sr.
Oh.
I will take that.
Oh no.
And he's got a grudge against like inventors.
He's his father, Blade Yeager.
Blade Yeager.
Oh my God, this one writes itself. Please, 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 Travis Knight, make John Cena play Blade Yeager, the estranged father of Cade Yeager. Come on, this one writes itself.
I want all this to kind of like come together in a Daddy's Home sequel.
I would absolutely, like, you know, just John Cena's kid and Mark Wahlberg's kid. You know, they're both playing with little Transformer toys.
Yeah.
And they start taking it into how to play with them better and how they kill the other one. That would be great. I'd watch that movie.
Nobody like says anything, but it was like a knowing look to each other. Like,
exactly. Yeah, that would totally work.
Do you remember that time?
Are you? Nope. By the way, you remember that action movie we heard about a while ago called Peppermint? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
It was basically like a John Wickified version of Kill Bill.
Yes.
And yeah, it's the thing, we've now got an actual bit of casting for that.
Yeah.
Which I'm okay with. Very okay with, in fact.
I don't know if I am.
Well, Jennifer Garner, in what's effectively a straight-faced John Wickified version of Kill Bill, bear in mind, this woman got her start in Alias.
Yeah.
I'm good with that, because she's kick-ass in Alias.
It's all the stuff post-Alias. I've never warmed to Jennifer Garner.
This is the thing. I never have either, but I've also never cared, because I loved Alias that much.
That's fair.
Well, the first three seasons of Alias, anyway. I'll be honest, when you have a season of Alias that's Jennifer Garner versus Melissa George, you not only have my interest, you have my attention and adoration, sir. When you then also use that to actually reunite the cast of Kill Bill for no reason whatsoever, then you're just cherry on top there.
Yeah.
That's absolutely what that is.
So have you heard about the 17 Avatar sequels that we're going to get?
Yes, I recall there being three or four dozen of them, yes.
Yeah, something like that. And apparently they're all going to have the same villain, and it's the same villain from the first one.
No, not Stephen Lang.
We're going to have Stephen Lang.
What?
Because the man don't age.
Also, he's dead, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's not in the tree, is he? They didn't download him into the tree,
amazing.
Did they?
Oh, I'm sure that'll
And
be.
Now now he's taken over the planet with
he'll
his consciousness, so the planet's turning on themselves.
So he's essentially going to be Ego.
Yeah, he'll eventually become Ego, yeah.
James Cameron went to go see Guardians 2 and was like, that's a great idea.
I could have some fun with that. Maybe use some 3D.
Yeah, he said that he's going to be the bad guy for all of the sequels.
What?
Which is...
Do we have any word yet on if we're getting Giovanni Ribisi back?
Well, he said it's pretty much the same characters.
I'm okay with that.
There are new characters and a lot of new settings and creatures, so I'm taking characters you know and putting them in unfamiliar places, like trees, and moving them on this greater journey.
Also, Sigourney Weaver's in the tree, isn't she?
Yes.
Yeah, so
everyone's going to be in the tree.
Everyone's
going to be in a tree.
But yeah, the tree's just going to be like LinkedIn. Everyone's in there. No one wants to be there.
Yeah.
It just
exists.
We don't
know how to get out. We're still getting emails from the tree.
Exactly. The tree's just giving us notifications that we ignore forever.
That's it.
Mega City 1, the Judge Dredd TV series.
No way. That's the thing that I was just about to talk about. Great.
Talk about it, Mr. Elm, please.
Well, my computer isn't loading, so I will leave it up to you.
Okay. So, well, we know we're getting a TV series, sort of, not a continuation of Dredd, but, you know, a Dredd TV series. Apparently, Carl Urban is in talks to star, which is amazing news. Not completely unexpected, because Carl Urban has done television before. He did Almost Human a couple of years ago, which was a very...
Yeah, that had a really good kind of concept.
That could have been a Blade Runner sequel.
Yeah.
That really could have. And given the awful sequel series they made to Total Recall shortly afterwards, I would... Was it? Oh, no, Minority Report, sorry. So shortly afterwards, I would pretty much have happily preferred this one as a Blade Runner series. But, Carl Urban, Mega City 1, does this mean, with him being cast, they will actually modify to actually be a Dredd follow-on, in which case I'm on board.
Yeah.
Does this mean we can have Olivia Thirlby back as Judge Anderson?
She was great. I've not seen her in anything since Dredd.
No, I can't remember seeing her in anything.
Yeah, she was really, really good in that.
Isn't she?
Lena Headey's amazing in that.
Olivia Thirlby is in... What's the Best Man movie with Kevin Hart? The Wedding Ringer.
Wedding Ringer.
Wedding Ringer. She is a love interest in that for Kevin Hart's character.
Huh, interesting.
And very likable in it.
She's real. I mean, I was first aware of her in Juno.
Yeah, she was in Juno. Yeah.
Yeah, she's a friend. She's Juno's friend. Best friend.
I forget she was in that one.
Yeah.
Oh, we already talked about Transformers, didn't we? Did you know Transformers, as a cinematic universe, is now going to get its first animated feature film installment?
No, and I can't believe it's taken this long.
And it's going to be an origin story.
I mean, obviously, we're not including the classic animated.
No. This is set within the live-action cinematic universe.
Right.
The Marky Mark, Shia LaBeouf universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Blade Jaeger.
Blade Jaeger universe, yeah. But also, it's not our release date yet, but once it's released, it will start a new chain of annual theatrically released animated Transformers movies to go alongside the annual live-action Transformers movies.
What have we done? What have we done to deserve this?
This is your fault, humanity. This is what you have wrought down upon us. This is what happens when you pay money to see Transformers movies.
This is the fire and fury that Trump was talking about.
This is it. This is absolutely it. This is what brings about the apocalypse. Yeah. Well, for cinema, anyway. By the way, did you hear about the Jim Sheridan movie? Jim Sheridan's doing a prison movie about the Irish prison break escape. What was it called? The Maze Escape? I forget what it was called.
I'm not sure. I'm getting a bit confused with new prison movies that are coming out.
There's a few, aren't there?
There's about S. Craig... What's his name?
The guy who
did Bone Tomahawk. Yep. He is doing a prison film with Vince Vaughn that looks really good.
But it has Vince Vaughn in it.
I know. That really must be good. Oxymoronical, isn't it? It's...
Well, yeah, and there's also Escape Plan 2, so...
which will be great.
Of course, it would be amazing.
Is Simon West doing that?
No, he got another director, didn't he?
Did Simon West do the first one?
Simon West did the first one, yes. Yeah. But I just remember having that great kill line. Boom. And then you blew up the dude from Person of Interest. But anyway, Jim Sheridan's doing a movie, H Block, which is about an infamous Irish prison break. Now, Cillian Murphy's in there. Along with Jamie Dornan.
Killian Murphy.
Every different person, a different pronunciation.
It's definitely Killian.
Well, it's now had a production delay, and the problem is that this delay has caused a scheduling conflict for Mr. Murphy. In that, he's due back at the BBC to do Peaky Blinders.
That's it.
So he's going to have to drop out of this film now and leave Jim Sheridan in the lurch. This movie, by the way, is called H Block.
Have we got a replacement... Meth?
No replacement named as of yet.
There's loads of strong Irish actors out there.
Have you
heard about the new Jafar?
No, this got cast, didn't it?
Yeah.
And isn't he basically an unknown?
Which is great. I think that's how you do it.
He looks the part. He kind of looks the part.
He does look the part. He's younger than I thought they would.
I thought that too, but
which is cool.
He's going to have some height on him, I'd imagine. He must be a tall guy.
I mean, it's a big hat.
Yeah, it's a big hat.
It's a big hat. You get a parrot on there. You get a staff. So his name is Marwan Kansari. I'm really sorry if I'm just butchered ripping.
No, that's actually it. Marwan Kansari. Yeah,
he's going to be in Murder of. Start again. He's going to be in Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh, the Ken Branagh remake.
The Cabaret.
Cabaret.
Yeah, he's going to be back. So I think that's going to be like his big kind of like introduction.
Hey.
So that'll be really cool. He definitely looks the part. I think if you Google him, you'll be like...
I can't wait to see him with the long, straggly goatee.
I think as soon as you see like some set photos, you'll be like, yeah, that's fair. That is Jafar. And also Nassim Pedrad from SNL is going to be in that.
Who's he
going
to be?
Oh, it's she.
Oh, sorry.
She's really... She's on SNL. I know
who you mean now as well, God.
Is she in Cooties as well?
I think so, yes. Yeah. I know exactly who you mean as well.
She's really, really good actress. She is not actually playing someone from the Disney film.
Oh, a new invented character?
New character, yeah. Oh, she's just going to be like a friend... No, she's going to be like a handmaiden.
And I suppose that's something the films kind of lack, don't they? The animated film kind of lacks any characters really for Jasmine to interact with, bar the tiger.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
It has the tiger, so I think you need someone.
You need
like
a human.
Yeah. What was the tiger called?
Oh, God, that's going to bug me.
That's going to bug me as well.
Huh.
Oh, man.
Answers on a postcard, please. Through Twitter, Facebook, whatever.
Or we could IMDb this and end this horrible nightmare.
That's a lot of work.
Not knowing something.
That just sounds like so much effort.
Doesn't it?
Meanwhile, Doug Liman has finally answered a debate that has raged for ages.
Why even bother doing Dark Universe?
There is that, but also...
No, it's not Justice League Dark.
Oh, Justice League Dark, yes, sorry. Yeah. I was going to say, I don't think we should bother doing the Dark Universe either, but okay.
Well, people would agree with that, I think.
Well, Doug Liman has finally answered the question, what is the title of Edge of Tomorrow? The title, Forevermore, as far as the director of the film is concerned, is Live, Die, Repeat.
Okay.
That's why. It is not Edge of Tomorrow. Edge of Tomorrow apparently was a title.
Did he say another one for this? Something again.
The original title, the graphic novel, and what the film was made as was All You Need Is Kill.
All You Need Is Kill.
Warner Brothers apparently insisted on retitling it Edge of Tomorrow, but then the tagline, which the director wanted as the title, caught on in that way that Die Harder caught on and not just Die Hard 2, so they repackaged it for the home release as Live, Die, Repeat, Edge of Tomorrow. As far as Doug Liman is concerned, the man who is making a sequel entitled Live, Die, Repeat, and Repeat... This film is called Live, Die, Repeat. There you go. That's the end.
Oh, that's it. So it's not Live, Die, Repeat, and Repeat. It's just Live, Die, Repeat.
This is Live, Die, Repeat. The sequel then is Live, Die, Repeat, and Repeat.
Oh.
Okay. That's what they're called. Live, Die, Repeat. The sequel is Live, Die, Repeat, and Repeat. There you go. That's it.
That's a saga.
Forevermore. That's it. We can end this discussion once and for all now. Yeah. That's it.
It's done. He said it.
Exactly. And by the way...
Much better titles as well. And well, while, I mean, the original is the best title.
Of course, but while we're settling this, it is called XXX The Next Level. No, it's called XXX State of the Union, not XXX 2 The Next Level. We can sort that one there and then. Done. Also, it's not Avengers Assemble, it's Avengers...
X squared. X cubed.
They were called.
Yeah.
They were called XXX squared and XXX cubed. That's what they were originally called.
I think that's great. It's stupid, but it's great.
The Untouchables got a new title, didn't it? While we were away.
Oh, yeah, what was it? I don't like it.
The Upside.
Yeah.
Which is a ridiculously...
Pretty generic.
Generic title.
It's like calling a movie Spy.
Yeah, it doesn't really refer to anything. Yeah,
or Bridesmaids.
Exactly. we're going to get a comedy any day that's just called People.
Yeah.
It's just going to be called People.
Funny film.
And it'd be like...
had funny people.
Jason Bateman and Kristen Wiig are... People.
They are.
That's going to be it. That's just going to be the poster. Totally it.
That'll be it. David F. Sandberg, director of Shazam.
Oh, yes. Definitely.
Someone needs to pronounce like Shazam. It would be amazing. Said it's going to be a light-hearted movie for the DCEU.
Well,
see, that's canny pronunciation.
Look, there are
a light-hearted movie for the DC. So it's. Might still be dark, but compared to everything else, it's lighthearted.
I'm just going to put it out there that there are Christmas mornings in an orphanage that are more lighthearted than the DC movies. But
Apart from Wonder Woman, which is
lovely.
Ruddy delight.
It is. Isn't it a ruddy delight?
It's great. I'm going to watch it again. I've only seen it once. I need to see it more times.
Pacific Rim 2 has been delayed.
Oh my God, that's news I was going to say as well. No, we are on the same
We
page.
Are. We're on sync. Yeah, sync.
Someone has delayed the apocalypse. It's not cancelled it.
They've not cancelled the apocalypse. Postponed it by just over a month.
Yeah.
Which, okay.
It doesn't sound as good to say, we are postponing the apocalypse.
But wasn't it Valentine's Day it was out? Wasn't it going out on Valentine's Day? Like opposite, or March? It was out March. It was going to be opposite Black Panther, and now it's going to be closer to the summer.
Which makes sense.
Which is fair. No one wants to go up against Black Panther. Who would?
Yeah. Well, it's going to hit theatres March 23rd, 2 days after my birthday, 2018.
Oh, well. Wow. What do I can only celebrate one thing. So do I choose you opposite Rainbow?
I think that my birthday film this year is Tomb Raider.
Is it?
Interesting.
This year? Well, this next year. Next year.
My one for this year was Get Out. Which
is pretty good. That is pretty good.
And then the previous one, there were two films out for my birthday, two big films, 10 Cloverfield Lane and Zootopia.
The one for me was...
I love seeing a film on my birthday.
Oh, I do it every year. Traditionally, I will always go to an IMAX screen on my birthday and see whatever's out.
It's good.
And my favourite one was 1 year I got to see Pacific Rim.
That was great.
That was lovely. That was a lovely birthday. Last year, owing to unresolved promises I had made, I went to see the BFG. Which, not the film I really want to spend my birthday seeing.
You liked it way more than I did.
I wanted to see Star Trek Beyond. That was it. And I, because of timing and the fact that I'd already promised to, I had to see BFG. This year, didn't get to go to an IMAX screen. However, I did get to see, Valerian on my birthday.
Oh, right, yeah.
So that was fun.
That kind of works, huh?
But, yeah, so I'm okay with that. So, rest of the news, up to you, sir. Have we got anything?
Yeah, I got a few pieces. Jennifer Lawrence has finally spoken out about Passengers.
Oh yes, she now kind of sees why people were irked by it.
See, I've still not seen it, so if there's a twist, I don't really know what it is. So maybe I should watch it to be up to date with what's going on and whatnot. But she says, I get it. Maybe I should have considered that one a little bit more carefully.
Yeah, I would watch the film if you didn't quite get what the
I think I can put it together and I'll probably talk to you about it off air.
To be fair, when Passengers was on the blacklist of unproduced screenplays, the log line and the description they gave it, that's what people had the problem with. That's actually the film. The film that's marketed is not the film.
It's not the film, yeah.
The film that's marketed makes it look a bit more sci-fi mystery-ish. It's not a sci-fi mystery. It's something else. It's a Black Mirror episode. Basically a big-ass Black Mirror episode.
But you could just stay home, go on Netflix, watch some really great Black Mirrors.
Exactly. But, you know, that doesn't have beautiful people like Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt.
It has really beautiful people.
I mean, it has Bryce Dallas Howard, who's very beautiful. But
It has...
Who else does it have?
I've forgotten both of their names.
Mackenzie Davis.
Yes.
That's Mackenzie Davis. Yes, and Gugu and Martha Raw. They are very beautiful. And Wyatt Russell. Very beautiful.
I was going to say, beautiful man.
Beautiful man, Wyatt Russell.
Yeah.
But Wyatt Russell, I just wanted to...
Bron,
true.
Bron's in it.
But I want Wyatt Russell to hold me and make me feel like he's Kurt Russell. But, and Bron, yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. That's one of my favourite episodes from that reboot.
The Bron episode?
I really like that Bron episode.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm all about the Gugu Mbatha or Mackenzie.
Yeah, I feel like everyone is. I like it as well. I don't think there was necessarily a bad one for the reboot.
No, not really.
It was nice to have it. And they had a much bigger budget, obviously, but it doesn't look like they went overboard.
It's not long before the next one.
I know.
That announcement's come out of nowhere.
Do you know who is directing one of the episodes?
No.
Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster's directing a Black Mirror episode.
It's pretty great, isn't it?
I mean, on there. That's totally awesome.
Because I feel like after watching something like Money Monster, it kind of... Although that is not as, obviously, sci-fi or horror as Black Mirror is, I can see... seeds there.
Yeah, I suppose I can. Oh, apparently Tim Story's remake of Shaft will be an action comedy.
Okay.
That kind of makes sense, I suppose.
So how long is it going to be until Kevin Hart is announced?
Yeah, I keep waiting for that.
Or Tyrese. You get Tyrese.
Do you know what? I would so go for Tyrese as Shaft.
That would be amazing.
That really would. Or actually, do you know who I think would be the definitive Shaft? It's a bit obvious, though.
Go on.
Chadwick Boseman. Just imagine.
I don't think that's obvious at all.
You don't think?
I think it's
no, because he's got a couple films out that look like Shaft at the minute. There's one on Netflix.
Oh, is that about King?
Yeah, the King.
Message from the King.
That kind of looks like Shaft.
A little bit, yeah.
And he's got another one coming out that's like a period piece where he's a real-life figure. Ran for... Is he a guy that... Is he not Clarence Thomas? Is he Clarence Thomas?
Oh, the one with Josh Gad.
He's like an ass-kicking younger Clarence Thomas.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of the Marshall.
Marshall, Marshall Law, something like that. Marshall, I forget. No, not, something to do with Marshall.
There's too many films.
But yeah. But that's another one where it's kind of like Shaft, but it's a period piece.
Have you seen the Louis C.K. thing where he says, we should just stop making films because there's enough films?
He's not wrong.
Yeah. He's not like, wrong. You'll never be able to see all, so just. He says it about like adult films as well. He says, why make any more? Because one person will never be able to see them all.
Wait, you said that about adult films?
Adult films as well.
You mean porn?
Yeah.
Speaking of, by the way, can I...
what a segue.
Speaking of porn, can I just tell you...
Yeah, I don't mean adult films like Glengarry Glen Ross. Yeah. 12 Angry Men.
That'd be like adult films like Disclosure. Or, you know... What do you call it?
Films for grown-ups.
I mean adult films like Margin Call or All Is Lost.
Any film by J.C.
Chandler. J.C. Chandler, they're adult films. Yeah, or anything, you know, Steven Soderbergh, that's an adult film.
Anything yellow.
Yeah. But, you know Blair Williams, my favourite adult film actress?
Only because you've told me that, yeah.
A winner of the reality TV series The Sex Factor. She is starring in, well, she has starred in an erotic, well, erotic film, an adult film entitled Ivanka and the Russians. And she's
playing... Is that about what I think it is?
And she's playing Ivanka. I'm not making this up.
What is Ivanka's surname?
Trump.
Oh, man.
I know. So, I'm going to have to find that at some point.
And lo, the world was eradicated because of a porn film.
Exactly. So, I would watch that. And, you know, now I think about it, Blair Williams and Ivanka Trump, there are some similarities. So, this could be interesting.
All right.
So, I look forward to that. I don't think it's going to hit Netflix anytime soon or Amazon Prime, but...
it's probably not going to be a Curzon release.
Not a Curzon release, no. I don't think it's going to be an IMAX 3D or 4DX either.
No,
so.
It won't be an artificial eye. Won't be in the Criterion Collection.
It will not, no.
It won't.
So, anything else for me?
Yeah, Donald Glover has spoken out about the Han Solo director's divorce, as it's called.
Has he? I've not heard this.
He's not said anything bad. He's just said, like, they didn't really... Like, the cast themselves were a little bit kind of sheltered as to what was going on.
Okay.
He said, because of who he's playing and his age and stuff,
yeah.
He said that he kind of felt like the younger child in a divorce, and everyone else was like an older brother. But
that kind of makes sense.
That kind of knew what was going on and was just like, it's fine, you just do that thing, this is going on, it's not going to affect you too much. That kind of thing.
Huh, okay.
Which kind of makes sense, but he also says that, like, things are going good with Ron Howard, and it seems like it's a good atmosphere. And I've seen, like, not set photos, but of just, like, them hanging out. They went to, I think it was the Glass Castle premiere.
Oh, yeah. That's quite recent as well.
That was quite recent, yeah. There was a picture of, like, Alden Ehrenreich and Woody Harrelson and Donald Glover. And
not that you'd know it at all, of course, because Brie Larson hasn't been everywhere at all lately.
No.
I mean, I'm sure you're loving it, but she is everywhere right now.
I have the time of my life.
Tell what, she was on like Kimmel the other day or Fallon?
She was on Fallon the other day. Yeah. Not that I'm stalking.
Not that you have Google Alert set up or anything. Like, that's not a thing, Google Alert? I don't know. But not that you have like, you know, Twitter bots tracking your movements or anything like that at all now.
She's in Starbucks, but in America.
She's in Starbucks. 46 miles away from Blair Williams.
And Van's just out himself.
But
Disney have pulled, well, are going to be pulling all their films from Netflix.
Ah, now this is the thing. All the films that you say that is up for debate.
Is that the thing?
So,
because there seems to be a few different things. So he just says Disney to pull movies from Netflix to launch its own streaming service next year. And then there was talk about having a separate one for Marvel and Star Wars.
Yes. And apparently they've debated that option, although they have said we may actually just leave that with Netflix. They have said as well the Marvel TV stuff stays with Netflix, which makes sense since pretty sure Netflix pay for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are Netflix originals.
They're Netflix originals in the truest sense.
Seems like a weird...
It's
weird thing.
A very strange move. I wouldn't divorce Marvel from Netflix at all because that seems to work perfectly. But, I mean, especially in the US, because we don't really get it in the UK. But in the US,
we used to have more Disney content.
Yeah. But in the US, Disney is really embedded in Netflix.
Yeah.
So much so that it's an ongoing conversation as to whether who's going to buy Netflix first, Disney or Apple.
Well, haven't we got that Disney Life thing, which is essentially what I thought
is a streaming platform, yeah. Which this seems to be a rebranded version. I'm not sure if Disney Life is only in the UK, maybe something like that. Maybe
it's only like an international thing.
Yeah, but they do keep talking about who's going to actually buy Netflix, as if that's actually a thing that needs to happen. And
well, it's come out maybe because of all this debt.
Well, haven't they spent something like $6 billion on content? Was it $6 billion or something like that? $600 billion?
I don't know. No, it can't be $20 billion. $20 million in debt, maybe.
Right. Just consider that. Consider they spent $100 million on House of Cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much are they spending on The Irishman?
Yeah, how much are they spending on The Irishman? How much are they spending on, you know, Bright, which is $100 million? Is it Bright $100 million or $200 million? Something like that.
No, I think it's $100 million. Still crazy.
It's crazy money, and they're making so much.
Yeah.
They are making so many programs. They've got six active Marvel shows on the go.
They've got to start doing theatrical releases. They've got to do that Amazon platform.
They've got to do what Amazon do. It's just getting a little bit
more. To get a little bit more recognition as a company that does theatrical films.
Yeah.
Because, like, there are really good original films, aren't there? I mean, the most high profile one is probably Okja.
It's true. I haven't watched To the Bone yet, the Lily Allen one.
Oh, no.
Lily Collins. Lily Allen? That'd be a very different film, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And there were some really great, like, indies on there.
Yeah, there's Fundamentals of Caring, things like that.
That's good. There's that, I don't feel
at home in this world anymore.
Yeah.
Is that Elijah really Wood and Melanie Lynskey?
Yeah, who I love. Directed by Macon Blair.
Oh, it is, yes. Yeah. I only found that out the other day. I'm like, oh, God, I'm going to have to watch that.
And it definitely feels like a green room, like a...
Yeah. It does. I'll give that a look. I kind of weirdly want to watch the new Marlon Wayans one, Naked.
I thought I would never hear you say that.
I know. But
after seeing Fifty Shades of Black.
I know, but it looks like a sort of Groundhog Day type thing, so I'll give it the chance. I'm a sucker for the Groundhog Day story. He wakes up naked in an apartment,
yes.
And a lift opens in front of him, and it's Groundhog Day, and the same thing happens again. Yeah,
that's kind of interesting. I'd watch that.
Groundhog
Day.
You just thought of it as well.
Yeah,
same here.
Yes.
Man, we just vibing.
We are on it today.
We are vibing today. So go on, give me the Groundhog Day story because it's so good.
So Groundhog Day is on Broadway. There is a musical version of it
by Tim Minchin.
Yeah. And, of course, Bill Murray was in the film that we all love and finally went to go see it.
He did.
But not just once. He went to see it twice.
That he went again the next day.
Yeah, enjoyed it so much he just saw it again. Bill Murray did a Groundhog Day.
I know.
Watching Groundhog Day.
I love that someone put it on Twitter like, that's the most baller move of 2017, I think was the quote. You're like, yeah, that kind of is. Oh, was it the funniest bit of 2017 is Bill Murray doing Groundhog Day, seeing Groundhog Day.
Apparently he loved it as
really?
Well. And was telling everyone it should be like mandatory to go see it.
I would love to see Groundhog Day as a play. I do want to see it.
I think it's been at the West End and maybe already gone, which is a shame because I do want to see it. I am seeing Hamilton though.
You are seeing Hamilton. Are you confirmed? Do you have your tickets?
Yes. Well, I need to print them off, but I booked them.
The tickets?
I booked them, yeah. Booked
you
them.
Jammy kid.
Yeah. Oh, booked them ages ago. Booked them last year when they went on sale.
Oh man, I want to see Hamilton.
Yeah. I think it's going to be there for a while.
Yeah, okay, well, I'll get the chance. So, anything else?
I'm out.
Well, I'm long out. I'm spent.
You are spent.
Well, on which note, let's not drag this out then. Yeah. Here it is, your moment of Kazakhstani Cage.
I can tell you that everyone has been so hospitable, so friendly. I've never felt such a warm welcome. I've traveled all over, and I will recommend Astana and Kazakhstan to everyone I know. The food has been great. The architecture is extraordinary. Everything that's happening here is very exciting. So just thank you so much for welcoming me in your beautiful country. Thank you.